Once Kinalach, there was a man named Reb Chaim. The story really doesn't say what his name was. We're going to call him Reb Chaim so we don't get mixed up. And he was a businessman. Now, in order to do business, sometimes you have to go away on a trip, and sometimes you have to go far away, and sometimes you have to go far, far away. And Reb Chaim now has to go for a very long trip that's going to take 6 months, half of a year. And he has to say goodbye to his wife and the kiddies and go far, far away. And of course, in those days, this is a long time ago, they couldn't talk on a telephone. So you're really saying goodbye for a long time. And even if you send a letter, it takes a long time to get there. So Reb Chaim said goodbye to his wife in the Kinalach, and he took his suitcase, and he starts to go down the road to go far, far away. On the way, he stopped into the house of his friend, Reb Yaakov. Reb Yaakov and Reb Chaim were good friends. And he wanted to say goodbye to his good friend, Reb Yaakov. And when he went into Reb Yaakov's house, Reb Yaakov says, "Reb Chaim, where are you going?" Reb Chaim says, "I'm going to a place called Niezhin." Niezhin, that's a Russian town. And Reb Yaakov got very excited. "You're going to Niezhin? Oh, do you know which great tzaddik is buried in the base of Kfaris in Niezhin?" And Reb Chaim said, "No, I'm sorry, I don't." He says, "The second Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Mittler Rebbe, Reb Dov Ber, his kever is in the base of Kfaris, exactly in the town that you're going in Niezhin. Please, I'm asking you, I know you're not a chassid, I know that you're not connected to the Rebbeim of Chabad, but since you're going to that town and you're my friend, I'm asking you for your own schus to please go to that kever and visit that kever, because as we know, Kinalach, it's a very halakha thing to go to the kever, the grave of a tzaddik, and say halakha things there and ask Hashem and the schus of that tzaddik that he should give you a bracha and have rachmanis on you and give you a big bracha, like we do when we go to the oihel or we go to the grave of a tzaddik. And also you can make over there a pidyon. You know what a pidyon is? On a piece of paper, you write pei nun, and you ask Hashem to give you a big bracha, ana lo'era rachamim rabim, and there's different ways to write a pidyon, but you write this note and you put it on the kever, or you read it by the kever and tear it up, and this is a halakha thing. Now, Reb Chaim said to Reb Yaakov, "Bli neder, when I go to Niezhin, I will go to the kever of the Mittler Rebbe, and I will say over there some davening." And now Reb Chaim left on the business trip. Now usually, when a person goes on a business trip, they buy things, and they sell things, and they make money, and they buy more things and sell more things and make money. The problem was that for this trip, Reb Chaim had no mazel. Everything went wrong. The weather was terrible. It was freezing cold and snowy. And whatever he bought, nobody wanted to buy. And he lost money. And then he had to borrow money to buy more things. And certain things broke. And certain things got lost. And certain things, chas shalom, were even stolen. And he had to borrow more money. And he got into debt, into chayvis. He owed people money. And people were not buying his things. And the whole time, things were getting worse and worse. Whatever could go wrong seemed to be going wrong on this trip. And that was not the worst thing. There was something even worse than losing money and losing things. Every day, as Reb Chaim was riding in the wagon, traveling around, he felt afraid. He felt scared. He felt very worried, like there was a black cloud over his head. Now, what was wrong? He kept thinking to himself that something is wrong with his wife. He didn't know why. He didn't have any letters or, of course, no phone calls, and nobody told him anything. But he was worried that there was something wrong with his wife. Then he said, "No, I'm just imagining it. I don't have any reason really to think that. So let me just get it out of my mind, and I'll think about something else." But Kinelach, it would come back to his mind, the thoughts, "My wife, maybe she's sick. Maybe something went wrong. And sure enough, the whole time that he was away, his wife became very ill, very sick. And she got worse and worse. And doctors came, and they gave medicines, and the medicines didn't work, and other doctors came, until she had 3 doctors coming every day, and they didn't even know exactly what was wrong, and she got more and more sick, until everyone in the town even started saying Tehillim, and they were very worried. So it was not just for nothing that he was feeling afraid. He was really, really feeling how his wife was feeling. She was very sick. And this worried him. Now, Kinelach, after a few months of his trip, he finally got to the town of Nezhin. And he remembered that he had told Rabbi Yaakov that when he gets to Nezhin, he's going to go to the kever of the Mittler Rebbe. And by this time, so many things had got wrong, and he had lost so much money, and he was so worried about his wife that he was very, very happy to go to the grave of the tzaddik to say some davening. But it was a very cold winter day, freezing cold. He had on his thick coat, he had on his boots and his gloves and his scarf and his special hat. And usually in the cold weather, he would feel warm in these clothes. But for some reason, that day, as he went to the Beis HaKfaris, he got freezing. Even inside of his clothes, he was shaking. And he started to feel even more afraid and scared about his wife than ever before. And he started to shake. And every step that he took closer to the Beis HaKfaris, he got more and more afraid. And he said, "Should I run away from here? Should I be afraid to go to the Beis HaKfaris?" And he said, "No, of course not. I'm going to a tzaddik's kever. Nothing should be wrong there. It just must be that maybe something is wrong. And that's why I'm going to daven by the kever of the tzaddik. I'm going to daven for my wife. I'm going to daven for Hashem to help." He went to the kever of the tzaddik, and Kinelach, he said certain halakha things that we say. There's a little sefer called Mina Lashon that has things to say by a kever. And over here by the Mittler Rebbe's kever, on the walls, were written different things to say on the wall. And he read these things, shh. And then he wrote, "A little pidyon nefesh." Remember I told you, I think about a pidyon nefesh? It's like a little note, and it says, "Pei Nun," and you ask Hashem to have Rachmanes and to give you brachas and to help you. And he wrote a little note asking in the schus of the tzaddik that Hashem should help his wife. And he wrote also for his family, that Hashem should help his family and himself. And then he read the little note and he put it on the kever. He put the little note on the kever. And as soon as Reb Chaim did this, he noticed on his little clock that it was 10 o'clock in the morning. He had a little watch. In those days, even they had these little like pocket watches. He noticed that it was 10 o'clock in the morning, and as soon as he put the little note on the kever, all of a sudden, instead of feeling afraid and scared and feeling shaking, all of a sudden he felt the biggest simcha, the biggest happiness that he ever felt in his whole life, bigger than Simchas Torah, bigger than Purim, bigger than Bayachasana, bigger than whenever he made a big business deal and he made a lot of money and he got so happy that things went good. He felt so happy, and he didn't even know why. Things changed from dark to light, and in fact he felt like he must be in Gan Eden. This is how the neshamas must feel in the Himmel. Such a big simcha. And he could not move away from the kever for 2 hours, just feeling this big simcha. And when he started to leave, you know what time it said on his clock? It was past 12 o'clock. He was standing there for 2 hours, feeling simcha. And he said, I can hardly wait to get home. First of all, to see how everyone is, and to tell this to Reb Yaakov, my friend, how I was feeling before I came to the kever, and how I'm feeling now. I think that when I go home, I'm going to find out what's going on. Okay, so Reb Chaim now travels all the way home. It took him a few weeks. By the time he got home, he had been away for 6 months. Now I'll tell you what happened while he was away. Before he gets home, I'll tell you what happened. His wife had become very, very sick, until, like I told you, there were 3 full-time doctors and even some nurses that were the whole time in her house, standing nearby, because they thought at any minute, chas v'shalom, she would pass away. That's how sick she got. And every medicine and every pill and every kind of thing they gave her did not work, and they couldn't figure out why not. She was so sick. Until one day in the morning, when the doctors were standing there and the nurses were standing there, and all they could do now was just worry. There was nothing more they could do with their medicine. All of a sudden, it was around 10 o'clock in the morning. In fact, it was exactly 10 o'clock in the morning on a certain morning. And all of a sudden, the woman opened up her eyes and started to look around. And one of the nurses saw, look, she opened up her eyes. And the doctor said, that's a good sign that she could open up her eyes. She hasn't opened her eyes for a while now, for days. She's opening up her eyes. And a little while later, they said, look, her face, she has color in her face instead of being very pale and white. She has some nice color in her face. She's looking better. That's a good sign. And a little while later, she lifted up her head and she sat up in bed. And she said, I'm very hungry and I'm very thirsty. Oh, she wants to eat and drink. It's a very good sign. And later on in the afternoon, she said, I would like to get out of bed and go for a walk and go outside and get some fresh air. What? You're strong enough to get out of bed and walk around? And right after that, she was able to get dressed, go out, go around the town, and she became, Baruch Hashem, 100% better. And everything changed around 10 o'clock that morning. And just like they couldn't explain how she was so sick, they couldn't explain how she was so much better, but Baruch Hashem, she was much better. And now by the time her husband came home, Reb Chaim came home, so she was at the door, and the kitties were by the door, and they were jumping up and down. Tati's home from the long trip. Oi, Tati's home. They were so excited. And kinalach, when Reb Chaim came in, the first thing he said to his wife, the whole time I was away, I was worried about you. I was so worried, and I couldn't get rid of the feeling and the thoughts that something was wrong. Tell me, was something wrong? And she said, yes, something was very wrong. I was very sick. I know it. You were very sick, But Baruch Hashem, you're fine now. What happened? And she told him the whole story. She said the whole thing over. She said, I was so sick, I was in bed, and I got worse and worse. I can't even remember because I lost my thoughts. I was like, the doctor said I was like just sleeping the whole time. And they said, on a certain day, all of a sudden, everything turned around, and I started to feel better. It started 10 o'clock in the morning on a certain day. 10 o'clock in the morning? Which day was that? Well, she said exactly which day. He says, wait a minute. That's exactly the 10 o'clock in the morning in the same day that I was in Yezhin by the kever of the Mittler Rebbe. And I put the note on the kever. And before that, I was feeling so scared. And I was feeling freezing cold, even in my warm clothes. And I was feeling shaking and scared and concerned and worried. And from exactly that 10 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden I got in such a simcha for a few hours. She said, in those few hours, I was feeling better and better until I was able to get out of bed. And Kinalach, he was so excited. And he ran to his friend Rabbi Yaakov. And he told Rabbi Yaakov the big nest that had happened by the kever of the Mittler Rebbe. And that's Kinalach the Maisa. That's the end of the Maisa. One time, a long time ago, Kinalach, a Yid was going on a trip far, far away. He was traveling down the road. And he started in the morning, and he was going and going in the afternoon. And he was going and going until the late afternoon. And he's going and going until the sun is going down, and he still didn't get to where he has to go. What does he have to do before it gets too late? He has to daven what? Well, what does he have to daven even before Ma'ariv, and it's after Shacharis, and it's still the daytime? Mincha. Who could say in the microphone? What does he have to daven?
Mincha.
He has to daven mincha. Now, Kinalach, if there's a shul, of course, you want to go to the shul to daven mincha. If there's a shul, you want to go to the shul to daven in a minyan, of course. If there's not a shul, you want to go into a room, a nice place, you can daven with kavana. But here was just a road with fields. Are you allowed to daven just in an open field? No, you're not allowed to do that either. You want to go at least to some kind of a wall, some kind of a tree. And by the road, just as the sun is going down, the man found a tree, and he starts to daven mincha. He goes into Shmon Esrei, and he's davening with great kavana. He's davening to Hashem, and he's only thinking about Hashem, Kinalach. All of a sudden, the trumpets start to blow. Dee, 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 dee. You know what that means? Somebody very important is coming down the road. And all of a sudden, Kinalach, there came a special fancy wagon with beautiful horses. And in the wagon, it was not the king, but it was a very big officer, a very big, important officer of the king. And this was one of the biggest officers. And there were some people around there, and they heard the trumpets, and they saw the fancy wagon, and they said, look, this is a very big Roman officer. This is the time of the Romans. Shh. Let's go to see him. And of course, we know what we have to do, because they knew this officer, how big he was. Whenever you see the officer and he passes by, you have to bow down to show respect and covet for the officer. And the people ran to the road and they bowed down. And everybody was bowing down and giving respect and covet to the officer, except for one person, and that was the Yid davening by the tree. He didn't even know there was an officer in the road. He didn't even pay attention to any trumpets. He wasn't thinking about anything except davening to Hashem, davening with kavanah. So he didn't even know what was happening. But he wasn't bowing down, of course. And as the officer passes by, he smiles at the people, and he's so happy, and he's so proud of himself. He's such a big officer, and he feels so good to see all these people bowing down. When all of a sudden he noticed, hey, look, somebody is by the tree. He's not bowing down. He's not even paying attention to me. I'm very upset. And he says to the driver, bring the wagon right next to the man. And they bring the wagon right next to the man. And the officer thought that if the man will see the beautiful wagon, the special officer wagon with the special horses, fancy schmancy, he'll realize that the officer is there and he'll bow down. But he still didn't bow down. And the officer got very, very upset and very angry. And boy, his face was red like a tomato now. And the officer says to the yid davening by the tree, don't you see who's here? Don't you know who's here? Don't you know what you should do? And the yid kinelach, this is a yid, who knew that when you daven, in davening kinelach, we have our yetzer toiv, our neshame, and we have a yetzer hara, and the yetzer hara tries to bother us and dreis a cup, and he tries to do all kinds of things in our head that we should not daven. This yid knows that when the little voice comes in your head and starts saying something, that you should look around, you shouldn't daven, you should start playing around or listen to other things besides davening. Do you start listening? When you hear the voice start to dray you a cup, hey, think about going out to do something else. Think about what you're going to eat after davening. Think about what you're going to play with. Think about what you're going to do later or tomorrow or tonight or yesterday. Think about your bike. When these voices come into your head, are you supposed to listen to them when you're davening? Are you supposed to even daven harder that you shouldn't even pay attention to these voices? What do you think? Who could tell me what they think? Well, what should you do when you hear such voices? What do you think?
You're not supposed to listen when they're singing.
You're not supposed to listen. So what you should do?
Should.
What's the best way? Just not to listen or to even daven harder? What should you do?
Daven.
You should even what?
Daven harder.
Even daven harder. And then, the voices won't bother you. Kinelach, do you know that this yid started davening with more kavanah and he wasn't paying attention at all? And the officer got so upset. And the officer started getting so angry and he reached for his sword. And he pulled out his sword, he lifted up into the air, and he almost was ready to bring it down on the head of the yid who was davening by the tree. Shh. But all of a sudden, kinelach, the yid, all of a sudden, right when the sword is going to come down, he takes 3 steps back. What's he doing? He's finishing Shmoneh Esrei. I don't know if the sword came down or not, but if it would have come down, it would have missed his head because he takes 3 steps back and the sword would miss his head because he's out of Shmoneh Esrei. He finished Shmoneh Esrei. Oh boy, was he lucky. Shh. We don't want to say if the sword really came down because mommies would get very upset that their kiddies hear about swords coming down. So we're going to say maybe it came down, maybe it didn't come down. Shh. The fact was, kinelach, that the yid finished Shmoneh Esrei, and all of a sudden he looks up and he sees the officer, and the officer says, you're not paying attention to me, you're not listening to me, you're not talking to me, you're not answering me, you're not bowing down to me, I don't understand. You better explain yourself, or this time the sword will get you good. Don't you know who's here? And kinelach, the yid was a smart yid, and he didn't get all of a sudden scared, and he didn't get all of a sudden excited. The main thing is to explain to the officer now what he was doing. Yes, even an officer, even he's a goy, he'll understand very well what he was doing. Shh. And the yid said to the officer like this, officer, you are an officer for the king. Is that right? Oh, yes. Yes, that's right. I'm an officer for our great king. And officer, do you ever go and stand in front of the king when the king is sitting on his throne? And the officer all of a sudden says, yes. Once in a while, I am called to the king. Once in a while, could be maybe once in a week, sometimes once in a month, not too often, but once in a while, the king calls me to stand in front of his throne, and I'm standing in front of the king. And the Yid says to the officer, how do you feel when you're standing in front of the king, when he's sitting in his throne, on his throne with his beautiful crown? And the officer says, oh, I'm so afraid. I have such respect, such love for the king. He's so great. I feel very special. And the Yid says to the officer, what would happen if you're standing in front of the king and another officer would be passing by or standing next to you and starts talking to you and he wants you to turn around and talk to him? Would that be something the king would like for you to do? Or the king only wants you to pay attention to the king? And the officer says, oh, if you're standing in front of the king, you're only supposed to pay attention to the king because the king is so great and special. You're not supposed to pay attention to anybody else. If you would turn around and start talking to somebody else while you're standing in front of the king, you would be in very big trouble. In fact, the king can even punish you with your life, because any little thing away from the king is going against the king. So when you're standing in front of the king, no matter who it is, even the greatest officer, you don't pay attention to. The Yid smiles at the officer and he says, officer, that's all I was doing. You see, I am a Jew. And 3 times a day, I go before the king of all the kings and the whole world, the Melech Malchei HaMalachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I go in front of Hashem, who is the king of the whole world. 3 times a day. The officer says, 3 times a day? Yes, not only once in a week or once in a month. 3 times a day I go in front of Hashem, who's the king of all the kings in the whole world and the king of all the malachim and everything. And I only, during the davening, pay attention to Hashem. And if the officer comes, officer, I'm sorry if I made you feel bad. I was trying to concentrate on my davening. And near the end, I did hear that you were there, but I couldn't turn away, because I was in front of Hashem. And only when I went out of Shemona Esrei, then I was allowed to turn around to speak to you. So you have to realize, I have great respect for you because you're an officer. But just like when you're in front of the king, you can't speak to another officer. I was in front of Hashem and I was not allowed to speak to you. And Kenelach, the officer, saw that the Yid did not mean any harm, and the Yid spoke from his heart, and he meant it with an emes. And you know, when you mean something with an emes, and it's Tvarim HaYetzim and Alev, the God of your heart, it goes into somebody else's heart. And the officer